Today on the Rising Coaches Podcast.
You know, one of the things I've always appreciated is that stress shortens your time horizon. And it shouldn't. That's the last time you should be thinking about short time horizon. You should be thinking about how to be strategic, how to be to build the best, strongest case for the next step for you.
Thanks for listening to the Rising Coaches Podcast. This is Adam Gordon. And today we are joined by Paul Carnes of RIM Financial. This episode's a little bit different. We usually have coaches on the show, but today we have Paul Carnes. Paul is one of the top financial advisors in the country for college basketball coaches. And I thought it was important to bring him on the show. Obviously, we're dealing with the coronavirus pandemic, and the impact that that's had on the economy is something that's affecting all of us, including college basketball coaches. So we talk a little bit about, you know, what to do in crisis time with your finances, how to get through it, what you should be doing with your money. And we also talk about just some generalities of what college coaches and pro coaches should be doing financially. That's an area that I neglected during my coaching career. You know, some people, and was just genuinely curious what people should be doing in a profession that has so much turnover, so many ups and downs, and so little job security. Also a profession where you can go from making 20 grand a year to 100 grand a year at the drop of a dime. So what do you need to do to be prepared for those moments? We have a really good conversation, a lot of really good, useful information. Please write us a review, subscribe to the podcast, and follow along with what we're doing at risingcoaches.com. Okay, before we jump into today's podcast, I want to talk to you briefly about the Rising Coaches membership. You know, so many people ask, what is it? What do you get? Will this help me get a job? That's the million-dollar question. A lot of times people hit us up when they need job advice and asking for help. And look, we're happy to give advice and help anytime we can, whether you're a member or not. And we can't guarantee that signing up for a membership is going to get you a job. We don't want to get into that. But what we can guarantee is if you do sign up, there's some tremendous content on our member site, and we are constantly bringing in new coaches and guests to speak to our group. So we really feel strongly that it'll help you with your development. If you want to meet coaches in the profession from all different levels, which I always strongly advise, you never know who can help you in this business, both personally and professionally. I can guarantee you'll have a lot of opportunities to create genuine relationships with those people and different coaches that you would have never met otherwise. And if you want to be a part of a community of coaches that's there to bounce ideas off of, help you, support you, then please, I think Rising Coaches is something that you'd be interested in. So if you think that this is something that you can benefit from, check out our website, risingcoaches.com/membership. It's only $120 a year, which is $10 a month to be a part of it. That's an annual fee, and we hope you'll consider being a part of our community of now over 500 coaches, which is awesome, in just 5 months of having the membership program open. So grateful for everyone that's a part of it, and we hope that you will consider joining.
Paul Carnes is the president of RIM Financial. All opinions expressed by Paul or other participants are solely their opinion and do not reflect the opinion of RIM Financial. This discussion is for informational purposes only and should not be used as a basis for investment decisions. Clients of RIM Financial may maintain positions in securities discussed. Securities offered through Royal Alliance Associates, Incorporated, RAA, member FINRA SIPC. RAA is a separately owned and other entities and or marketing names, product or services referenced here are independent of RAA. Bottom line, opinions do not equal advice. For specific recommendations, please consult your financial advisor, tax professional, or legal advisor.
Paul, thanks for joining us today. How are you?
I'm good, man. Thanks for having me on. I'm humbled to be with you, and I love what your organization does. Serve coaches and have a lot of respect. I've been following you guys for a while, so I'm happy to be with you. So,
yeah, you're like a big college basketball guy, right?
I love it. Yeah. This time of year, well, I mean, like a month ago, I live in Charleston, South Carolina, so there's like three Division I schools around us. So, you know, a lot of nights, my sons and I are in the gym watching a lot of guys who listen to this coach. And it's just, there's nothing better in my opinion. And certainly having schools like the College of Charleston down here, great venue, it makes it all the better. So certainly a fun thing to do.
Yeah, no question. And I'm excited to have you on the podcast. We've been wanting to speak with you for a while, but I think, especially with what's going on in the world right now with coronavirus and the impact that that's had on the economy, I thought it was important, and we've talked about it, you know, that we get some of this information out there now, because, you know, people are wondering what to do. And obviously, you know, some people are panicking, hopefully not too much, but, you know, I thought it'd be good to start with that a little bit and then get into, you know, some more general advice towards the end, because I do think finances is a, and we'll get into it later, but I do think finances is a place where a lot of college coaches are a little negligent there and maybe don't pay as much attention to it as they should. But yeah, let's start with the coronavirus and what's going on now. Like what should people be doing financially during crisis times?
Yeah, that's such a good question. You know, if anything comes out of this podcast for your listeners, it's just, you know, finance is deeply personal, it's behavioral, and it should be somewhat simple. I feel like one of the things that my industry has done a poor job of is introduced all these complex things and put them in front of our clients and kind of overwhelmed them. And so, you know, when I work with clients, I try to get them to understand. And it really is about your behavior, ability to save, your ability, you know, to be patient and take advantage of opportunities when they're there. But, you know, as it comes, I feel like this coronavirus, I love all the internet memes that are going on. I feel like March went, you know, lasted for about 5-10 years. And, you know, really, I feel like I was on a call last night. I was talking about how this 2-3 week period has come in cycle in waves. The first wave to me was the market reacted. There was a ton of uncertainty. It happened super quick. You know, we saw it over in China, but we've seen this before where these diseases have popped up and they didn't really materialize here, but all of a sudden it was here. And I think the markets were really caught off guard by that. And then obviously we saw the drawdown that ensued. And now we're starting to see it get to businesses. Certainly, you know, restaurants and hotels and airlines and things like that are way, way down because they're just not operating. And so, you know, so a couple of takeaways that I've noticed is, you know, we've seen a lot of people are talking about the Spanish flu or the Great Depression. There's a ton of overlap as far as the charts looking similar. You know, a couple things that your listeners can take heart in is our government has taken action. And you may or may not disagree with everything that's come out of that legislation, but they've acted. And one of the things that didn't happen during the Great Depression was the government didn't, if anything, they acted against, you know, the interest of their people. They raised interest rates or they didn't inject, capital into the economy. And so they're doing that now, and they're going to support businesses. They're going to try to support hiring and getting people back to work. And so and they've also helped the individuals with, you know, one of the simple things if your listeners haven't been aware of it yet is they extended the tax deadline. So usually you buy your taxes on April 15th, and now you have until July 15th to file and pay your taxes if you have them due. If you are expecting a refund, you should just go ahead and file as you normally would and go ahead and get your refund. But if you owe, you have until July. And so it's just a lot of in the moment, it feels scary because we don't know where it's actually going to head. But, you know, if you look back on how our government's reacting and then, you know, how the American people have reacted during these things, you can have a lot of optimism coming out of it, but you know, when you distill it down to what should your audience be doing is pretty much what they should be doing on a daily basis anyways. I mean, focusing on saving the proper amount of money in their 401ks or 403bs if they work at a school. Managing their debt load, making sure they're not carrying too much debt. Keep an eye on their spending and their expenses. Those types of things are just the regular day things that you should be doing. And when events like this happen, it either magnifies your situation or it insulates you in your situation. And so that's really what I'm working with on clients is getting an understanding of where they are, taking a snapshot, and then and trying to put a plan to move forward that benefits them and their family.
So if you're already, have been saving on a monthly basis, you should continue with what you're doing.
Yeah, to the extent that you can. Certainly, if you've lost a job or anything like that, you certainly go more into survival mode. But if things really haven't changed for you, meaning, your coach, you haven't lost your job or, your school hasn't cut you back or anything like that, you have good reason. And really, mathematically, you have really good reason to be saving into this market because, asset prices have come way down, since the beginning of March. We were trading at all-time highs about a month ago, and now we're about 20% off that level. And so you can really get some things. And really, if it's automatic, you're buying large. You're investing broadly, and that's a good thing. You should definitely continue doing that.
Yeah, and I know you have to be careful about trying to predict where things are headed. But you mentioned the impact this has had on businesses and the market. I think you're starting to also see that it's having an impact on schools and higher ed. Most universities have, or a lot of universities have frozen spending. Several schools have closed the doors and have had to shut down. Do you think this will continue to impact that level? And, when it does get back to somewhat normal or the new normal, do you think schools will be operating kind of leaner than usual? And maybe you won't see these, I know this is probably hard to predict, but maybe you won't see 15 guys on a college basketball staff. Maybe they'll just have 10.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think if there's an analog to what's going on in the corporate space and in the collegiate space, it's the big boys will largely be insulated and be able to move on. And so, you talk about the Power Five schools and things like that. You can make the argument they're going to take a hit short term, just like everybody else will, but they could emerge from this stronger than they were going into it. With the ability to, one thing is for sure, if you just pay attention, your game is not going anywhere. People are begging for live sports to come back. Now, what it'll look like when that happens, you could go a lot of different directions on that, but there is definitely a market for college athletics. So that you can just take that off the table. Now, and one thing, another analog between the college sports and corporate is right now there's just people are fleeing to quality, and so they're fleeing to the things that are stable and predictable. And if you look at it, that in the personal space, that means cash, right? Having enough cash on hand that if something happened to your job or something happened to your income, that you could stay afloat for a while. And so that gives people a good sense of comfort. And, if you're at a school that has been operating on a shoestring budget for a while going into this, then you may have some reason to, to feel a little bit more uncertain about what they're going to go forward. From what I'm hearing is a lot of these schools have already kind of they've already given that indication of where they're going to go, at least with their executive staff. It's kind of starting to distill down. Like you said, some schools are actually, announcing they're shutting their doors. And that may be a good takeaway for your audience. As you're looking at jobs, I mean, ultimately you're doing this as a way to provide for you and your family an income and a way of life. And, this was completely unpredictable, but it is real. And so this may teach and may be a good lesson to kind of, take opportunities where there is more stable or more stability, and maybe it's not as high on the chain of the coaching ladder, but it is a stable job and it is a stable way to provide for you and your family.
Yeah. What about people who, you know, haven't been in the stock market? Is this a good time to get in because it is so low, or no? You would advise people, if you're not already, you know, in that, if your money's not already there, this is not the time to start messing with that.
Yeah. So I think it really comes down to where you are personally. I have clients in both arenas. And so if you, you know, if you think back 10 years ago, roughly we were coming out of the global financial crisis, and the takeaway for that, I'm 39. So really most of my working years have been coming out of that period. Right. And so we got to a point where we looked around and said, hey, man, like we can't really afford the houses that are around us because they've gotten too expensive. Stocks look really expensive. Everything has kind of run up on us. And so what this has done is it's kind of provided in a weird way a reset point to get back into these assets, right? And so that may be a positive for your audience. And it really goes back to where you are personally. And if you have cash sitting on the sidelines, if you have an emergency fund established, and then you have some extra cash sitting aside, it may be a great time to take advantage of that, right? But, you know, we don't know where this market's going. I pay attention to it very closely. The folks that I work with across the country, they pay attention to it very closely. And we all sit on calls and say, man, this thing could go up. It could be a giant V where it goes down sharply and then goes back up as soon as we clear this virus. Or it could just hang on for a while. And so what you don't want to be in is a position where you take this opportunity to invest and then something happens with your job and you need that cash and now your positions are down. And so it really just comes down to where you are personally and having a solid foundation with that cash sitting there in case something happens.
Yeah, and you mentioned that you pay close attention to the markets, obviously. One group that does not pay attention to it, and of course there's exceptions, but speaking in broad terms, are basketball coaches. And I can speak from firsthand experience that, you know, when you're in the rat race of coaching, college coaching, professional coaching, whatever, you are so tied up with so many different things and you're wearing so many different hats that you always are gonna ignore something that you probably shouldn't be ignoring. Some people choose to ignore their health and, you know, they don't exercise and they gain weight and whatever. Some people choose to ignore their family, and so they end up in broken relationships or marriages. And some people, like me, ignored their finances. So that I'm really excited to have you on the podcast because you not only do you work with a lot of basketball coaches, you also work with a lot of millennials, a lot of Gen Z. You know, you kind of specialize, I don't know if you specialize, but you do work a lot with younger people that I assume, you know, are like me, or some of them at least, and really don't even know where to start. So maybe we can start there. Like, where do you start if you're not making a ton of money, you're not making six figures? You know, what is a good place to start? I know you mentioned emergency fund. Is that something to begin with, or you know, what are your thoughts there?
Yeah. So the first thing you got to deal is in known quantity. So really, if I'm taking on a client, the first thing I do once we get comfortable with each other and agree to work is find out where they are and find out where, you know, where they are mathematically. So what kind of assets they have, you know, what kind of liabilities they have, those types of things, and put together a snapshot. And then kind of figure out also what the story is. I think that's super important to understand, because that what their story has been will largely tell you how they'll interact with money going forward. I'll give you an example. My grandfather, who is in the later stages of life, he forever drove this old Ford pickup truck, right? And I just, that's just what I always saw when I went up there. And he's done really well with saving and investing and things like that. You would never know that by, you know, by the kind of truck he drove. My uncle worked for Cintas. And so he would, whenever they got uniforms cycled out, he would drop them off with my grandfather. And so my grandfather always had his shirt on with some other dude's name on it. And I saw him 2 weeks ago at a funeral, and literally that's what he had that on. But if you looked at his portfolio, that was like, you know, it's super sophisticated. He's got all these different positions. He's got real estate. He's got all this stuff. And so, like, to me, when I look at him, I look at, man, cars just don't make a difference. Like, that's telling a story for somebody else, not for me. And so for the first 15 years of my working life, I drove an old car, right? And so, you know, that stuff like that will tell you where people's priorities are or what they care about. Some people want to have a big house. Some people want to have a nice car, those types of things. Some people don't do that, and they just want to save money. That's where they find their comfort. And so, you know, gathering that data and kind of putting that all into a model can help us establish our, you know, our working relationship. And you're right. I work with 30 to 50 year old clients. The only two clients I have that are retired is my grandmother and my father. And I do that for a reason, is because I understand, I resonate with that age group because I am that age group. I'm doing the same thing a lot of my clients are doing. Is I'm building a business. I'm cash flowing my household. I'm saving for college for my three kids. You know, I'm saving for retirement. All these things that my clients are going through, I'm walking alongside with them on. And so I'm trying to build, you know, established, you know, ongoing relationships that allow me to anticipate what their needs are going to be. And so if you're just starting out, the best thing you can do is take that snapshot to figure out where your strengths are and where your weaknesses are, and then understand where you're, like, what's got your attention. Like, when it comes to your money, you should be able to say, man, this has got me a little bit worried right now. I got too much debt, or I don't have enough in my retirement account, or those types of things. You know, people can tell you that pretty front of mind because it is on their mind. And so from there, yeah, if you're at a school that has a 401k or a 403b, just opt into that thing and get it automated as quickly as possible. Because one thing we do as humans, we spend what we make. And so if you can go ahead and allocate some of your long-term savings automatically through your paycheck, you'll get into this posture where you're saving and you don't even realize it. You'll just be living off your income. And so, and then, you know, if you don't, try to find $50, open a Fidelity account or a TD Ameritrade account, and, you know, buy an index fund every month. Just try to get it drafted out of your paycheck. It's super available now. You don't have to work through a broker like you used to. And you can go on there, use the app, and just have that automatically done. And just get into that rhythm of saving and watching your accounts and watching your network. Is such an important thing to do at any age.
So I'll give you a specific example that I went through.
Sure.
You know, I spent years, you know, in support staff roles and trying to climb the coaching ladder. And, you know, for the first, you know, I'm going to give you the amounts that I made for my first job. All right. $7,500 sure. a year, $8,500 a year, $12,000 a year, $25,000 a year. And then all of a sudden, in the blink of an eye, it went from that to $65,000 a year. And this is when I'm single and no family and no one to support. Should I have been saving when I'm making, you know, $25,000 or less? And then when you make that big jump, you know, what are you doing to, and what should you be doing, you know, with, you know, any extra finances that you have?
Yeah, I mean, to the extent of how much you should be saving, I mean, that's again, like an individual thing. But yeah, if anything, it becomes behavioral more than mathematical in that situation, right? It just becomes, hey, this is a priority. It's like paying taxes. You still pay taxes on $7,500 of income. So it just becomes a priority of your financial life. And you could make the argument, and you've seen it happen. You probably saw it happen when you went from $25,000 to $65,000. you find ways to spend $65,000, right? All of a sudden you drive by the car dealership, and like, oh, I could do that now. Or you get, you know, you get into a different apartment complex or whatever it is that happens, right? So building those muscles early, right? And, you know, building those muscles, those savings muscles early, even if it is with a little bit of money, just gets you in that mindset and it gets you in that thought process of this is a priority. I know that it's not going to add up to much right now, but it builds the habit for when I'm down the line and I am making more of that money and can pay off dividends for you.
That's really interesting. It's more, you know, habit and behavior based. What do you have, like, strategies to help your clients drill down into some habits?
Yeah, so I try to get folks to understand in the finance community, there's everybody has different opinions, but really, you know, I think if you can find a way to save 15% of your income and maybe give 10% of your income and find a way to live on 75% of your income, I think that's a simple way to create a model for success, right? And so that does a couple things. First of all, if you can automate that 15%, like we talked about, whether it's through your 401k or 403b, through your school, and then get the match from your school, that could be a really helpful way to get towards that 15%, right? And it gets automated through your payroll, and it becomes, you know, almost an unconscious thing you're doing. And a lot of guys I work with, they'll send me their statements like, I haven't looked at these in 2 years, which is fine, right? Because right now, you don't want to be looking at your statements because it's going to freak you out and you're probably going to do something you shouldn't, right? But, you know, you got to get into that phase. And what I do with clients when they switch a job or they get to a new school is I have them send me their packet day one, because you know that from making – you talked about four different jobs. When you make those four different transitions, it's not like you just get there, pick out window shades, and, you know, pick out an apartment. You show up and you go to work, right? And so, you know, by sending me that information, I can read through it, digest it, look at the health insurance, look at all the other stuff that is offered to you, and then I can look at what the retirement options are, and I can help you allocate that savings immediately before you get your first paycheck or whenever you're, you know, go ahead and select it and prepare for it when you become eligible. And then, you know, when you get to that 75%, that's just you've already accounted for that, the long-term savings piece. And then the 75% is just what you want to do with it, right? So if you want to have a bigger house, you know, you can do that somewhat guilt-free because you're not compromising your long-term savings goals. If you want to have a bigger car, a more expensive car, you can do that without sacrificing your long-term goals. So if you get that offer letter and it says $75,000, you need to take 15% off of that immediately before you start spending it and say, I'm going to save 15%. So that would be, you know, $7,500, $8,000 needs to go directly into your retirement account. And then you let the rest of it, work out through payroll.
Yeah, that's such good advice and so true. Like, you know, I remember – when I made that big jump in pay, you know, it was to go to Mississippi State with a brand new staff. And, you know, I probably got the call on a Thursday and I needed to be there on Monday. And I was moving from Colorado to Mississippi, you know, packed up my car, you know, drove halfway across the country. And you get there on Monday and you're going 1,000 miles an hour. You know, everything that goes into taking over a new program, from turning over the roster to figuring out the game schedule to figuring out, you know, who does what on campus. So it's just, it's so much at once. And you know, I had never had any money like that I was earning from a, you know, a job. So I didn't know, and I didn't already have like a relationship established with a financial advisor. So I just kind of let it go into my paycheck and my bank account. And then when I'd go to spend money, I'd be like, oh, I got money in there, like no problem. And I wasn't buying new houses or cars, but, you know, I probably wasn't being as, you know, smart with my money as I could have been. So when you aren't making money, like, and you are at that $25,000 a year job, can you establish a relationship with a financial advisor, or will they not let you in the door?
Yeah, I mean, you should pursue that. And should, like, even if you're not engaging, like, a, you know, even if you're not, like, getting on their roster or however you want to put it, you should be seeking out that advice. And so there's a lot of different things. Vanguard and Fidelity and Schwab have automated advisor platforms. So that may be something you use when you are at that level. But, you know, having that in place at that early stage will give you some accountability, but it will also, you know, get you in that posture, that behavior of paying attention to your finances, paying attention to what's going on, and really paying attention to how you perceive what's going on, and how you react to those things is really important. So, you know, I can't speak for all advisors. I love talking to your cohort. I love basketball. We talked about at the top, like, and so I'm happy to speak with your audience. I'm happy to, you know, to answer any questions, at least to get guys started. And where we are now is light years away from where we were 10 years ago through platforms, like I mentioned before, Schwab and Vanguard and those things. There's so much more access to the markets and so much more access to the savings things that you can have. And then as you evolve through, you know, the coaching field, you may decide to formally engage somebody who can help you do some deeper financial planning, just as you would engage an agent or anything like that as you progress.
Is there anything, one thing all coaches have in common, you know, for the most part, is lack of job security. So is there anything that coaches should be doing differently than maybe your average, you know, 9-to-5er, in terms of savings to combat the constant turnover?
Yeah, that's such a good question. I thought about that as we were preparing, and I think about that a lot with the guys I work with. That's such a big difference between the coaching field and most other jobs. My wife is a teacher. She goes under contract, and, you know, as long as she does her job, you know, they're going to keep her around. And so I think we've seen, I mean, listening to your podcast with Coach DeFitt this week, I mean, there's a tremendous amount of uncertainty. I mean, you could do what you think is a good job for your school, and all of a sudden a new AD comes in or anything like that, completely out of your control, especially as an assistant. I mean, as a head coach, you have a little more control because you're running your program. But as an assistant, you're working for the guy. And so, I mean, we go back to it. I mean, you ensure your situation with cash, right? Short term, get to it easy cash. And that does a couple things. It allows you to, it allows you to rest a little more peacefully during a time where maybe you lose your job, or maybe you have to take a job, you know, for a little bit less money. I've worked with guys who've gone from a Division I assistant to being an ops guy at the Division I level. A little bit of a pay cut, but we had the cash in place. They were able to offset, and then they worked their way back up, right? And so I think more than any other field, you've got to have that, you know, 3 months worth of expenses set aside in either a money market type of account, a bank account. It really just has one name to it. It's insurance. Like, if something happens, I can still pay my bills for a couple months and allow myself some time to really find another staff to work with, to find another job and start that income back up.
Yeah, and that's kind of that emergency fund, right? So at least 3 months worth of expenses set aside is probably wise for people in the coaching industry to have.
Yeah, it's a great place to start. Certainly, again, everything is individual. As you rise through the ranks, you may not need 3 months of expenses as a, you know, the Power Five head coach. You know, but you may, you know, you definitely want to have something set aside that will give you a time to breathe. And really, you know, this is another part of it, is you have to understand how your contract works. every school has different contract periods. I've known coaches to be under contract till June 30th. I've known coaches to be under contract till the end of April. And so knowing when your last paycheck will hit is paramount. And then also understanding how much sick leave you have, how much how much vacation time you build. One thing about coaches is different too is you guys don't use vacation. You don't use sick leave. And so you accrue this time. And then also understanding their HR is, what's the cap on sick leave? I've known coaches to carry a tremendous amount of sick leave, and then they leave a job and they're like, yeah, we can't pay you out. We can pay you out a portion of it because you hit the cap. And so just understanding all that and doing it in a period where it's not like life or death important. You have to understand that and kind of build in your model now. If you're in a spot where you have a job, you're under contract, you have some security, go ahead and build that model in. Because when you get that phone call or that text from your coach or from your AD, like your mind is going to go into hyperdrive. And, one of the things I've always appreciated is that stress shortens your time horizon. And it shouldn't. That's the last time you should be thinking about a short time horizon. You should be thinking about how to be strategic, how to be to build the best, strongest case for the next step for you. And if you are scrambling around trying to get HR, especially in a time like this where everybody's working remote, it's hard to have that understanding and build that strong case.
Yeah, you mentioned understanding contract and things like that. Are you working for some of your higher level clients? Are you working with their agents on structuring contracts?
Not in the details. That's certainly their expertise. I know I try to understand their contracts to understand how their money flows. As you get to that next level, and you probably know this from working at Mississippi State and at Clemson, is coaches have so much income that doesn't derive directly from W-2 income through the school, right? It comes from camps and it comes from appearances and things like that. So, understanding how that is structured and then what kind of, LLCs they need to have set up or corps they need to have set up and then how that flows down to their staff is really important. And so I get involved there, but I'm not giving input into, the actual contract with the agents.
Okay. Paul, I went to Twitter to see like what questions people had for you. And the one question that kept coming up over and over again was whether to buy a house or rent. And I know this depends on like the individual, but if you are planning to continue to move up the ladder and you feel like, whatever job you take, you may be there for 3 years or less. Do you have a recommendation there? That's broad.
Yeah, and especially right now. I mean, interest rates are really low historically, and you can make the argument in the next couple of months, people are going to be really motivated to sell houses. All that's fine, but, what I try to advise clients through and what we try to work through is, it is an individual decision. And, a home in Charleston, South Carolina, or a home in Manhattan, market's completely different than a home in a rural small town, right? And so you have to kind of build that into your model. And I've had coaches who rent, and it sounds strange. They're making great money. They're making more money than they've ever done, and they rent a house. And that was a hard conversation to have. It's like, you should do this. And one guy's been there for several years, and it's because when he moves, like, the thought of selling that house is crazy. Like it makes me nervous just thinking about it. And so you want to be able to be liquid in a way that you can move on. We just talked about it. When you go to a next job, it's already stressful. It's already action packed. And if you add on that layer of complexity of, hey, I got to sell this illiquid asset now, or I've got to rent it. I got to find people to stay in there and I got to worry about it. All those things. There is a point where you are making a certain amount of money, you hit this critical mass where you can jump into that real estate and it's not going to completely compromise your other long-term savings. But until you get to that point, you really need to look at the market you're in and understand how real estate does and really how quickly can it sell in all markets. and understand, like, is that the prudent thing to do for you and your family? And sometimes you just may have to swallow pride and say, look, I'm just going to rent this place until I either get a long-term commitment from my AD or, you know, I get a contract that, you know, it puts it in a smaller a portion of where my assets are.
Yeah, that's great. Paul, what else do you think, like, or do you wish that the coaching community knew about finances or paid more attention to? What have we missed?
Yeah, I think the greatest asset that coaches have is their ability to produce income, right? The ability to do their job. And I talk with a lot of guys, and it's weird to be doing this right now because typically, I think we're recording this on Wednesday, the Final Four, when it usually is. And usually we're all flying to somewhere and we're going to get in the lobby and hang out and talk about jobs and things like that, right? And it's so hard to look at other jobs and not get a little bit envious, right? And say, man, I could be at that school, or I could be at that with that coach or whatever it is. And you got to understand there's only a certain amount of college basketball jobs to begin with. And I love sitting in the gym with boosters or, you know, with fans and kind of just hearing their perception of things and like how great it is to be a college basketball coach. And what an unbelievable opportunity is to earn an income. It's hard work. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But the type of impact that you can have on young men's lives or young women's lives, coming through your program on a yearly basis and really pour into them and help, you know, maybe change their cycle of life is so tremendous. And then, you know, so I just see guys sometimes, they compromise that opportunity for what they think is a better one. And sometimes it plays out and sometimes it doesn't. And when it doesn't play out, it's a big deal, right? I mean, the risk to that is you go to zero in your income. And then you're either living off of savings or you're filing for unemployment, those types of things, until you can get another job. And so, you know, it's such a great opportunity to be on these campuses with these young men and to have the impact that you have it can't be overlooked. And so I try to instill that too with the guys that I work with when they're having these frustrating moments. Like, just think about what you're doing. I mean, it's such a huge deal. The exponential impact of that is huge.
Yeah, and you probably should be talking to your athletes a little bit about, you know, you want to be preparing them for life. So you probably should be talking to them about, you know, how to be prepared to manage their finances and probably, you know, I probably should have done more of that, but obviously you can't do that unless you have a understanding of it yourself. But that probably is good knowledge to pass on.
Yeah, and I speak to some teams and we talk about it. But you know, it is funny to see the room when you do that, and it never becomes important until it's important. I always think that it's, you know, you're speaking to a group of 21-year-olds or 20-year-olds, and you're talking about mutual funds, you're talking about saving and investing. And, you know, there's a group of guys who will really buy into that. And there's a group of guys who say, whatever, that's not my thing. But it is super important to at least put it out there and try to give, you know, if you get three guys on your team to buy into that, you've now changed three people's path. I believe that. Like, that's such a huge deal to get those guys on the right path. And if they do those small things like we talked about, just saving a little bit of money and buying something crazy, like, you know, buying a share of Under Armour stock or Nike stock, whatever it is, just to be able to pay attention to it, not because you think it's a great thing to own. It's just to understand, like, hey, my school just signed a contract with them. Why didn't the stock price move? Well, you're like one of a million schools that use Nike, right? And so just those things that, you know, become aware of your situation and really, you know, build a base of knowledge and then begin to tweak it as you go. It just pays huge dividends.
Okay, the website for people who want to get in contact with you or learn more is meetattherim.com. Talk a little bit about what you do with the Meet at the Rim Summit.
Yeah, so I guess 3 years ago, Jack Castleberry, who is at the Citadel with Coach Balcom, and I got together. Actually, Ryan Maddox started what is the Meet at the Rim Summit. He had a group of guys come in and at the Isle of Palms at the beach and got a beach house. And there's a bunch of assistant coaches got together and they went for two straight days. Everybody presented. And I was there as an observer. And so I talked to Ryan and Jack about, maybe contributing. And then obviously Ryan got out of the business. And so Jack and I took it and we said, what's the vision for this thing? We really want to become a mastermind for, our peers to really get in the room and chop it up and think differently. And I open it up each year by saying that this is what you're up against. And I want that to be communicated clearly because there's so much excellence in college basketball at the coaching level. And it's not just being able to diagnose X's and O's and off the ball screens and backdoor cuts and things like that. That's there, right? That's built in. But the type of people, the level of expertise that college basketball coaches have completely translates to the corporate space, to, being a good father, being a good husband, all that goes into it. We want to focus on that and encourage guys to really pursue that excellence. And so we've had Mike Ellis leads us off every year. You might know him from Bill of Six and Bill of Seven. He's now running another event. He works with coaches as well. We've had ADs come through. We've had head coaches speak. We've had ops. One of my favorite panels is how we have 3 or 4 guys that have gone from Division I assistants down to the ops level back up. And so hearing that perspective is huge and kind of hopefully rethinking what the ops position should be. And so we tried to create a think tank and give guys a room where they can think differently and maybe think differently about how this business should work. And so we've been doing it for 2 years. We do it in Charleston. It's scheduled for the end of May, but, God knows what's going to happen between now and then. It'll actually happen. But it's been great so far.
No, that's great. And, Paul, where can people get in touch if they have questions or want to learn more? Where should people go?
Sure. So I've actually joined your community last week. And then I guess I'm on the message boards. Need to get better about that. And then I'm on Twitter, at Carnes Paul. And then, my website, you can type in rim.financial or meetattherim.com and my information's on there. Like I said, I love talking hoops. I love talking what I do and helping folks with, with their finances. So even those guys that we talked about who were at the very, very beginning of their progression, the very beginning of their careers, feel free to reach out, jump on my calendar. Let's talk for a little bit. Even if I don't bring you on as a client, even if I don't take you on and open an account with you, we can definitely just, have a 15 to 20 minute conversation about where you're headed. I can hopefully point you in the right direction. And then, just keep in touch down the line for sure.
Yeah. What a great resource. Join Rising Coaches, hit him up, hit up Paul directly through his DMs on the website, and definitely visit his site.
Yeah, props to you guys. I've loved watching you guys this week. I mean, I know a lot of people are doing different things with their businesses, but you guys are doing a ton of webinars and a ton of resources, and certainly your events at all the Final Fours and things like that are a really big deal too. So,
no, I appreciate it. I appreciate it. Paul, thank you so much for everything. And we'll be in touch.
Absolutely. Appreciate it.
All right. All right. What'd you think?
That was good. What'd you think?
Yeah, I thought it was really good. I thought, thanks for listening to the Rising Coaches podcast. Just a quick reminder, please subscribe to the podcast, write us a review, and check out what we're doing on our website, risingcoaches.com.